The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
There is something about music that has the ability to touch people in ways other media can't. Perhaps it's the ease at which we can enjoy it. Perhaps there's always an appropriate song to hit the exact tone of any given situation. A music episode is something I've wanted to do for a while on this show, and I'm sure glad we've gotten one of Jewish music superstars to be our first musical guest.
Hello, my name is Benny Friedman. I am a Hasidic singer.
Benny and I will be discussing his family's musical history, as well as the ever-changing world of Jewish music. Thank you, Benny, for joining me. This is historic for this particular podcast. You're the first musician or singer, somebody from the Jewish music world that we've had on. It's something that we've wanted to do for a while, so I certainly appreciate you coming on.
Well, I'm very happy that I was able to break that glass ceiling.
I want to get a little bit of the history of Benny Friedman and the Friedman family of musicians and singers. So for people not or aren't aware, people know Benny Friedman. People might not know that you're related to Avram Fried, and people, and even fewer people, might not know that you are related to the Eighth Day. So if you can give me a little bit of an all-encompassing view of the Friedman family and extended family.
So I'll tell you a couple of stories that I heard about the musicality in the family.
Okay.
I heard this from the current Blujevit Rebbe, who told me that I guess his grandfather was just recently married, and his grandfather was the Blujevit Rebbe at the time, called the Tzvila Tzadik. And the newly married grandson, was spending Rosh Hashanah together with the Tzvila Tzadik. And after Shachris, the Tzvila Tzadik went into his room for a few minutes to prepare for Tkiyas Shofar. And the grandson went to go to the mikveh. Apparently there was a minhag to go after Shachris again to the mikveh. Anyway, he came back and his grandfather called him into his room. He went into his room and his grandfather asked him, "Where did you just go?" So he said, whatever. So his grandfather said, "Where did you just go?" So he finally told him, "Ich bin gegangen in Wasser. I went to the mikveh." So his grandfather said to him something like, "Benzien's Shachris is nicht mitama." So apparently my great-great-grandfather was the Baal Tfila by the Tfila Tzadik, and the current Blujevit Rebbe told me, "You don't even know who you're named after. I got to tell you who you're named after. You're named after Benzien, who was the Baal Tfila by the Tfila Tzadik. And when my grandfather went to the mikveh after Shachris, he got admonished by his grandfather saying, Benzien's Shachris is not mitama." So that's the first story that I heard,
that's the most historical story that you've heard about your family.
Yeah, right. But then I heard also that my grandfather, as a singleton, was a Baal Keira. He was reading the Torah in Shul somewhere in Russia. And my grandmother's father came home and said, "I heard in Shul today a young man reading the Torah. It was so beautiful, I think we should make a shidduch." So that is the second story of musicality in the family. And then, yes, as you know, Avram Fried is a great Hasidic music super duper star, like from the original originators, from the generation that really established current Hasidic music as it is known today. That's my father's brother. He shortened his name to Fried because he started out as still a Bachur in Yeshiva and he wanted to keep his anonymity. Little did he know he was going to become probably, for sure, one of the most well-known Orthodox Jews in the entire world. And his brother is my father. His sister is the mother of the Eighth Day brothers, the mother of Eli Marcus, who's a brother of the Eighth Day, so that's another cousin. And I have another cousin in Israel called Simcha Friedman, who's also a singer. And then many cousins, Baruch Hashem cousins and nephews and all types of family members who love music, koch in it, live in it, and enjoy it. When we get together, it's always a very, very enjoyable party.
So first of all, I will tell you that I, at the time the eighth day was coming out, I was in a shul. I was a member of a shul who the Rav was Rav Shmuel Marcus. And it was very confusing for about a week until I was able to talk to him. Like, is this you? Like, the album came out. I didn't see a video. And it was not. But it was confusing for a little bit. I will also tell you that your uncle, Avram Fried, was my first ever concert. I went to an Avram Fried concert when I was six. That was my first one when I was in a day camp. And he did like a nighttime concert, and I was 6 years old, and I fell asleep in the middle, but not because he wasn't exciting, but because I was six. Right. I think that most people listening, if they grew up in the same time that I did, and maybe you did, I'm not sure how old you are, probably around the same age, they know the two biggest musicians during that time period were probably Avram Fried and Mordechai Ben David. Probably there were others, but those were probably the two biggest ones. The Haas concerts were basically around them, and Jewish music kind of circled around them. But today, there's been—I know that if you go back to the Journey song about Jewish music, they go through the whole history and all the people that are involved. If they were to recreate that song today, they'd have to go a lot longer than the 3.5 minutes of that song.
Yeah, it would be the whole album.
Yeah, exactly. So I want you to talk a little bit about how this explosion started with those two. The music scene today is so much different, and there are so many more people. How did that happen, do you think?
I think actually that in that generation, I guess in the 70s, which was very shortly after the 40s, which is like basically the first generation after the Holocaust, the first generation really of kids who grew up, all the parents who were all from Europe, mostly. Being a singer was kind of a weird thing to do. The whole concept didn't really exist. You had like a Balmenagin in the court of the Rebbe, you know what I mean? Like Benzion Schenker, what was he? He was a Mojitzer composer, a Mojitzer singer. He wasn't a Hasidic pop star.
Right.
Such a concept didn't exist. And when it started to become a thing, people were very wary about it, and people were very hesitant to accept it. And as a result, obviously, people were very hesitant to try to enter that arena. I'm sure that there are great, great singers who could have been, you know, extremely famous and extremely popular and could have contributed a lot, but it just didn't even occur to them that this is something that they could do or that they should do. It was such a weird thing. And like we said, Mordechai Ben David says that his father had to really convince him, to push him. His father heard some of his compositions. He was sitting at the piano playing some original compositions. His father said, "What is this? Ah, I made some songs." His father had to push him to record it. He didn't want, he was scared, he was nervous. It wasn't something that was done. And Avram Fried also, he changed his name for his first recording as an adult, because he never dreamed he was going to do concerts or make, you know, in-person appearances. It was something very, very far from anybody's imagination. Shlomo Carlbach did it. He went all out, and he got huge pushback. That's a whole different story. I'm not all sure all the details. I wasn't there, and I don't know anything about it. But the fact is that he got a lot of pushback, and it was like very, anyway, so it took people for like, and the best examples are Mordechai Ben David and Avram Fried, who were able to show, first of all, that it's possible. And second of all, that it's possible to do it and to still be on Erlich Hayid, to still be somebody who you and I would love for our children to look up to.
Right.
The great examples of Jews, not even singers or pop stars or rock stars or anything like that. They're just geschmack Erlich Jewish, you know, role models. So once they did that, I think it opened up the path for now, basically anybody who's even a little bit interested in it, go ahead.
Exactly.
The road is wide open and you know, I mean, take your best shot. So today, you know what I mean? In the last, especially, I mean, now with computers and how easy it is for, you know what I mean? To access recording equipment and software and all that kind of good stuff. So all these things together have created a perfect opportunity for basically and anyone can come and take it.
And it's not only singers, it's musicians also. There are plenty of, like, you see it growing more and more. Every time you go to another wedding, there's a different guitarist, a different drummer that you might not have heard of before that is breaking into the business. The evolution of the availability for people also comes with it, the evolution of the actual song. So I want to talk to you, first of all, about lyrically, how music has changed. Back when I was a kid, every song was basically, you had two options. It was an English song, or it was a pasuk or a gemara that was turned into music. That's basically it. I've noticed over the last maybe 10 years or so, maybe even less, a lot of more people are composing not only original music, but original lyrics. And sometimes they're in English, sometimes they're in Hebrew. There's a lot more people that are not relegating only psukim can be turned into song, only tefillahs can be turned into song, only gemaras can be turned into song, but they're new original lyrics. I'm trying to figure out what made that change? Because that was one of the things that I've always, as a kid, I was like, well, why can't we write our own, like, Hebrew words? Why can't we write our own English words? Like, there were very few things that we had, and why all of a sudden the change?
I think that's it. Like, you and I are probably the same age, and all my contemporaries, you know what I mean, we're all basically around the same age, and we all probably came up either thinking the same thing or hearing the same thing. I know I did, and I'm not sure if it's necessarily, whatever, it's a taste thing, right? If you know what I mean? Some people prefer this, some people prefer that. But I definitely grew up hearing, you know, why can't we have lyrics? People should write what they're thinking and song, you know what I mean? So a lot of the guys our age, that's what we're doing. And then also, about 10 years ago, we basically saw that it's possible to do it and to do it successfully. Obviously, Mordechai Ben David and Avram Fried had very successful English songs, right? Each album basically had that one English song, and everything else was, like you said, the Psukim or Memori Chazal. And once in a while, the English song would be all the rage. But generally, the hit songs were, you know what I mean, the simple, old-timey Jewish songs.
Right.
Suddenly, about 10 years ago, it became a thing where you could have, like, even a pop song, a dance song, a song that could make it into the wedding playlist with original lyrics. Once we saw that that's possible, like, you know, that became all the rage. And just a little bit of my own personal opinion, it could be that we've gone a little bit overboard, and maybe it's time to do a little correction, like in the market, a little correction, and find that nice, sweet middle ground.
So along with that comes the advent of the music video. Now, the rest of the music world has been in with music videos since the 80s. But I would say in the last 10, 15 years, again, we've seen every single that comes out in the Jewish world now also has an accompanying music video with that. Is that just a modern phenomenon because of maybe social media and the advent of YouTube, or is that something that we were kind of behind on to begin with and that we just started adding in?
I'm not sure. My guess is that, like you said, in the 80s, there were music videos already, but I think it wasn't that in the general world there were music videos and by us there weren't. I think you're talking about, like, in the, like they say, the top 1%. Those artists who were making millions and millions of dollars and had tremendous budgets to work with were, you know, like the top performers in the world were making music videos, because to make a music video you needed a movie crew and it was a major operation and a major expense. And then with the advent of social media, YouTube, and how it became much easier and much more accessible and cost effective or whatever it is within reach for little guys like us who are not talking about those kind of numbers at all. Once it became possible for us to do it, that's when we, and I think the same thing is probably in the general world as well. You have, you know, these niche markets where you're not talking about gigantic numbers. I'm sure that music videos, things like that, also picked up in those markets as well. So I'm just assuming that we picked it up probably around the same time that Anoshim Ki Erkeinu, even if they're not, I mean, you know, people on our, I guess, you know what I mean, financial accessibility level, you know, probably started around the same time. That's my guess. I didn't look into it, but that's what I would guess.
Another trend that we noticed today that probably wasn't around when we were kids was the cover, the move to cover a lot of older songs or maybe even newer songs. I think the first like major band or group that I know that covered a song was Leif Tahar. They did on all their albums, they did like one cover, maybe an old Journeys song or an old song that they brought to the forefront. I think the one who popularized the complete transformation of an old song was Lipa Schmelzer when he did Mara Cohen. But now, like, it seems like every album that somebody puts out has this new way of looking at an old song. And I'll even point to one of yours, and it wasn't an old song that you did. You brought you've put a different spin on it with Mishima Amin, where you took a song that was not necessarily that popular in, let's say, the Hasidic world, in the Orthodox world in America, but it was probably very popular. It was only out for a year before you covered it in Israel. And I don't think if you ask anybody today in our world who Eyal Golan is, they'll be able to tell you that was his song. So I want you to talk a little bit about the cover, how people cover songs, how that trend started, and the taking of songs that aren't necessarily popular in the Orthodox and the Hasidic world and bringing it into that world.
Interesting. I don't think it's a new phenomenon. Actually, okay. If you look at the early Mordechai Ben David records and the early Avram Fried records, Mordechai covered a lot of Hasidic songs, a lot of songs that his father recorded before him. He re-recorded later on, and when we hear it, we just assume that it's a Mordechai Ben David song. And Avram Fried the same. Keil HaHidois, which was Avram Fried's first major hit on his very first album, the very first song on his record, was a song from the Rabbi's Sons. It was recorded before, and not so much before, and Avram Fried covered it, and it exploded and became extremely popular. I think music actually started as covers. Music couldn't start as covers, but...
the recording of music.
I mean, the Chazonim based all their, or most of their stuff on Nusach, right? They put their own spin on it, and they embellished it, but it was based on always something. And today, I guess, the world has become a lot smaller, right? So we have, it's a lot easier to find interesting songs and things like that. Mishima Amin, interesting. We felt like that song had made a little headway into the Hasidic community. I think we saw like one or two clips of that song being sung at like Hasidic weddings over here in Brooklyn. And we thought, let's ride it. So we quickly recorded it, saw that it was, you know what I mean? So that was the beginning of it. That was the first time where I saw that a Hebrew lyric dance song was being played.
Had legs in the Hasidic community, right. Yeah.
So then we contacted Ari Goldwag and said, let's try to do something like that. Let's make a dance song, Hebrew lyrics, talking about faith and hope and all kinds of good stuff. And that was the beginning of Yesh Tikva.
Right.
Which I think, I don't want to take too much credit, but that was the beginning or close to the beginning for sure. You know, one of the first songs that showed that it was possible. Yesh Tikva became, Baruch Hashem, very successful. And it was, you know what I mean? After that, it was, you know what I mean? Off to the races.
So those of us who've been following your career from the beginning, and I'll tell you my story, because I went to a wedding that you performed in, or that you were the singer before Yesh Tikva came out, and I had known who you are. And it was my cousin's wedding, was in Lakewood. It was in like 2000, 9, maybe. And I said, how'd you get, like, after the wedding, like during Shabbat Brachah, I said, how'd you get Benny Friedman to be at your wedding? He's like, I didn't even know he was coming. I just ordered a band. And now to see how you kind of like become, you know, Benny Friedman, because at the beginning, like only the hardcore Jewish music fans kind of knew who you were. But now everybody knows who Benny Friedman is if you have any tangential relationship with Jewish music. So just to watch your career, and that's only what, 12, 13 years now. So Yesh Tikva, you mentioned, that's the song that probably drove you from, you know, performing at weddings, and that's nice and everything, to being, you know, this big concert person and somebody who everybody sees every time he puts out a new album. My personal favorite song of yours is B'Shem Hashem. And I will tell you why. First of all, I like davening for the Amid, as about tefillah. And as somebody who doesn't have maybe the range of a regular Jewish singer, I very much appreciate the small range of B'Shem Hashem that you're able to fit into Kedusha, both Musaf and Shacharis. And it's really nice. And even if you want to like kind of show off a little bit, you could have a key shift in there, which you do only on the song. And people are very impressed, but it's really not that big of a range. And it's such a beautiful song. But my question to you is, what is a song that maybe you have or that you could identify from somebody else that you don't think gets enough credit, that people like, you should really listen to this song. It should really be more popular than it is.
Boy.
I hate to put you on the spot like that.
Good question.
Thank you.
Ha. I mean, look, I had a lot of hope for most of the songs that I recorded. I thought that my song Bum 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 was going to be a major hit. Could be, you know, we neglected to make a music video for it. So it could be that, I mean, that's the...
Yeah, it doesn't get passed around social media without right. the music video.
Those are the requirements for now. Interesting. I don't know. I Avram Fried recorded a full album in Hebrew called the Israeli album or something like that. That's a fantastic album, and I think it didn't really get enough recognition or enough credit. He has a great Yiddish album that really didn't get enough coverage. Also, like a lot of the recent albums. There's a lot, man.
I've not heard of the Israeli album. Just to piggyback on your exact point, maybe I will go now and check it out. It is available for $17 on Amazon. I will.
Well, there you go. Worth it. Hashtag worth it. you know the song. That's from the Yiddish album. What's it? Kolam Yisrael Achim, Achim Banefesh, Am Yisrael Achim. That's from that album, and also.
That one I'm not familiar with.
It's a beautiful, beautiful song. It's really a good album.
Let me ask you this. Do you prefer the high-paced dance songs, or do you prefer the ballads?
I love them both.
You love them both, obviously.
Yeah, really.
It's hard to make a music video out of the ballads.
That is correct. That is correct. I don't generally do it. And the truth is that in the last couple of years, I did a couple of them, and they're mostly like lyric videos with a little bit of footage
right
attached.
There isn't really a story that goes through the whole song that isn't necessarily right. Just acting out the song.
Right.
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 So let me ask you this. Two things of do you prefer? Do you prefer performing at concerts or do you prefer singing at a wedding? And if you're going to make a collaborative album with somebody out there right now, who would you pick?
Ooh, interesting. I love concerts. I prefer concerts. Concerts is, I feel, a much more personal connection between the singer and the audience. I think at a wedding,
you're kind of the background.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's how it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to be the center of attention. You're supposed to be the accompaniment to the wedding that's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So concerts are a lot more engaging. You know what I mean? The whole thing is more custom built, right? You choose your material and you have all the arrangements ready to go. Like a wedding is more right?
Kind of generic play.
It's very generic.
Play with dancing. And yeah. I will tell you, just going back on the on what you said about the background. So I hope a friend of mine who I'm not going to name, and if he's listening, he'll know who I'm talking about. When he was getting married back in about, I would say he's it's 11 years ago. He called me up and he said, listen, my in-laws want a name. They want somebody that they could show off to their friends, that they can make it that like, this is an important person, but I don't want someone who's going to take over the wedding. Who should I get? And I recommended Alvin Freed, because at that point I knew that that people of a certain generation regard him as one of the all-time greats. And we still do, but he also, like, the younger generation isn't going to be, oh, Alvin Freed's here. And I knew that he wasn't going to take over the wedding, and some people do. And that's great. And that's fantastic for some people. But if you're looking for that specific type, that a specific area where you can have a name that isn't going to take over the wedding, I think it's very important to that singers know that that's what they're being hired for.
Right.
So I understand that you're conscious. So what about your collaborative album? You're putting out an album, let's say in 2022, you're going to start recording tomorrow. You're going to start composing tomorrow. Who out there do you want to do with?
That's a good question. There's a lot. There's a lot of guys. You have to pick one.
Yeah, you could pick all of them. I feel like
pick all of them.
Too many cooks spoil the kitchen. But let's say you wanted to give me your list of people you want to collab with.
That's a good question. First of all, I mean, Morty Shapiro, good friend of mine, monster singer, fantastic. Shulam Lemmer, great, great vocalist. My cousin Ellie Marcus, The Eighth Day, obviously Avram Fried. Ishai Rebo. Yeah. Man, putting me on the spot. I have to think.
Would you go out of the box? Would you do somebody like Nissan Black?
So Nissan Black, I'm not sure, because Nissan Black, even though I actually, I'm not sure when this is going to air, but I just actually recorded, I participated in a song of me, and I'm one of about 20 guys, and Nissim is in there. Nissim does the rap in the middle. I'm not sure, just because from like, not, I'm a full steam ahead, support what he does.
Just do the styles mesh.
Yeah. Do the styles mesh and whatever. I have to worry about my audience, and you know what I mean? It would be more of a business decision, if you know what I mean. That's the direction. You know what I mean? That's like it's a stylistic thing.
I'll throw out one more name. And this is my favorite, like, vocalist, just purely vocalist, Ohad.
Opa.
Would you do a collab? I know it's hard. He's an artist role. You're here. Would you be able to pull that together?
That would be great. Yeah, it shouldn't be too difficult either.
I'd sign up for a Benny Freeman Ohad collaboration. I would do that.
How do you like the Ohad Shmuel Yungar collaboration?
It's getting there. It has to grow on me.
It's become a big hit.
I know, but at certain things I don't allow things to just because it's a hit. I have to absorb it. At my wedding, I sang Pia Pascha to my wife, and that was my first introduction to Ohad with Oiv Simchas. And
sure.
An Ohad Oiv Simchas collaboration was very interesting to me also. Those are very contrasting styles. I like when different styles contrast. Come together
to
make music.
That's really the question, because a lot of us in our business. Like Nissan Black would be a very interesting thing, because you're talking about two completely different styles.
Yeah.
A lot of us have basically the same sound.
Exactly.
I did a duet with one of my favorite, all-time favorite singers, Shlomo Simcha. And I've played it for a few people, and they're not sure when I'm singing and when he's singing. Like, it's hard to tell. So that kind of a thing, even though I loved it, it's kind of a waste.
Right.
I
mean, when AB and Shlomo Simcha got together, you could tell when
AB and Shlomo Simcha get together, that's a beautiful combination, because you have that contrast. I just sang on Aish, right? So it's AB and Shlomo Simcha and me. And people know when AB is singing, and they don't know if it's when I'm singing or Shlomo Simcha. So that's part of the art of the collaboration, is are you singing with somebody who's different enough to make it interesting, or are you just singing because why not? Let's just sing.
So in that vein, I think maybe a group. I don't know if Hachalis is still doing things, but one of my all-time favorite, which I really don't think gets enough credit, is Kol Achai, three Israeli brothers. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but they're on
Mizrahi. Sure, of course.
So that would be a very large contrast. Plus, you can play off the fact that this is a group and their right. harmonies are what makes them.
Or something that I've been wanting to do for a while, to do a duet with a chazan.
There you go.
Like someone like Cheskel Brecher, fantastic chazan. I'm actually putting out a song soon with Ari Leib Horowitz. He doesn't do so much chazonis, but he has the chazonish voice. You can tell when he's singing and I'm singing. So there's also that, like, to mix a little bit the pop and the chazonis.
Yeah,
so that would also be a nice idea.
When you're doing a collaboration, there has to be enough of a contrast between right. the two of you in order for it to make any sense. So let me close with this. You mentioned a couple of songs that you're working on now. Any new projects in the works that we could look out for you coming in the near or distant future?
Yes, of course. Always working. We're always working. Something very exciting that I'm working on now, which I'll give you the general outline of it. We're trying to start now something called, like, we speak notes trilos on b'soif, when we start talking about covers and things like that. Mm-hmm. We are starting now to work on a legacy project to choose somebody who made a tremendous contribution to Jewish music and to record a tribute to that particular individual and try to, like, give recognition and raise his name to the forefront. Like, for example, you have composers who have composed some of the greatest Jewish songs that you and I know, but you and I don't know that he composed it.
Right.
So the idea would be to put that name front and center and then feature songs that he contributed to the library of Jewish music, to the repertoire, and give him that proper credit and to honor the legacy of this particular individual, and then move on to the next one and the next one. So that's a project that we're starting on, and it's very exciting.
That's very interesting. I will also say that in Jewish music, in secular music, you have it a little differently. But in Jewish music, it's basically the singer. There are very few bands. Every once in a while, there's a group. But there are very few bands. It's all about the singer. So we don't really necessarily know about, as you mentioned, the composers. We don't know about the producers so much. We don't know about the music distributors, all these unsung heroes that kind of go into all these to the making and the production of the music. We don't even know necessarily the band members, the people who play the music behind the scenes. And if you're going to work on a project to highlight these unsung heroes that we owe so much to, That would be amazing. Is that going to be an album? Is that going to be maybe a live show that people could watch online, type of a thing?
Well, I think it's going to be each legend is going to be different. Some of it will be a medley of songs. Some of it will be a full album. Each one is going to get a specific kind of treatment.
Phenomenal.
But it's going to be exciting. Yeah.
Okay. Benny, where can people find your music? Where can people listen to you? Where, and maybe we come out of this pandemic, when can people start seeing you in concert again?
How does it say on the radio? We're everywhere. We're everywhere. we're on YouTube, all the streaming sites. We are on mostlymusic.com. We are on niggun.com and L'chaim, I mean, all the Jewish distribution companies in all the Judaico stores, and on obviously social media, all those places. And hopefully soon we will meet in person. Hopefully we'll get back to Israel, start doing shows in Israel again, start covering the country. I mean, the mask mandates are slowly coming off.
Yes, we're recording this the day after the CDC... right. drop their mask mandates and social distancing guidelines. So maybe soon. Nothing's on the calendar yet, but maybe soon?
Maybe soon. I mean, look, small things are on the calendar, right? Camps are coming back together.
Right.
Still, I'm doing some outdoor dinners. Big concerts, not. I mean, we'll see. Israel has gone full steam ahead with I think, outdoor shows. I'm not sure, but they're doing concerts.
Yep.
So fingers crossed, here's hoping.
Absolutely. All right, Benny, is there anything else you'd like to let our audience know or leave a last message?
I know that two people have put down deposits with my uncle, Avram Fried, to sing at the Suda Seidoa that they will celebrate when Mashiach comes. Two people gave him checks and said, this is a deposit that you're going to come by us and sing by us in our sukkah or whatever it is when Mashiach comes. We are very, very much looking forward. Should be Bekarev Mamish that we should get together and sing and dance with no end in sight, because the joy will be so overwhelming. So everything that we're doing now with the music and the singing and the dancing is all just getting in shape and just practicing for the Greisa Simcha, for that ultimate Simcha. And we look forward to it. It should be right away now. And it will put an end to all the suffering and all this mishigas that's going on in the world, the crazy world. And finally, like they say, the Shechina will be out of Golis, and it will be a joy that will last forever. And we are looking forward to that.
Amen. Thank you so much, Benny, for joining us. And we look forward to hearing great things from you in the near and distant future.
Thank you so much. Should be a lot of hatzlocha.
Amen. My thanks to Benny Friedman for joining me this week. Those of you who know me personally know how big of a Jewish music fan I am, and I'm glad to have been able to finally get this episode out. We are looking to have more musicians and more singers from the Jewish music scene on the show, and if you have any specific requests or ideas, feel free to reach out to us and offer recommendations. Until next week, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.